Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown, joined once again by the full crew. We set a couple extra alarms for JR so he could join us on this pod tonight. And we got a lot of good stuff for y'all. It's, looking forward to it. Got the whole crew together. We're going to make sure we get that that game recap in from JR that we missed earlier in the week. We're going to talk about, you know, the playoffs, some scenarios, you know, whether or not you'd want to buy or not, you know, momentum and some other things like that. And then we have a great guest to talk about the Bengals game. But before we get all that, let's go through some introductions, get caught up with the fellas, see how they're doing. JR, my man, what's going on?
I'm good, man. Wide awake and ready to go.
Hey, man, we love it. You've been doing a lot of work, man. We've seen you pop up all over the internet on these pods all over the place, man. Good to see you out there grinding, spreading the brand.
Yeah, it's getting closer to draft season, so it's our time to shine.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And Miles, what's going on, my man? How you doing? How's Teddy? How's the internet?
Busy. Teddy had a vet appointment today for an infected ear. And then we had puppy class. So it's been busy. Internet is fine.
Yeah, it's sounding good, sounding crisp. And I feel you on the busy. I'm rolling solo at the Brown household this weekend. My wife had to travel. One of her best friends, actually her best friend, just had a baby. So she's out there to go meet Journey. It's the baby's name. And it's me and the girls all weekend.
So how are you doing this right now?
I'm doing it. Well, you know, they're sleeping.
Are they?
They're sleeping for now. And I got about an hour and a half or so before the little one wakes up and says something, and she needs to go and sleep in our room. So I got time. Yeah, but you know, busy day today. You know, some kung fu for Adriana. Had to swing by the school, pick up some stuff for a fundraiser. Back home, some dinner, bath time. Yeah, I feel you. Busy times. So y'all pray for me this weekend. I hope to make it all the way through.
Hey, Star Wars this weekend though. That's all I know.
Yeah, I was The gym that my daughter does martial arts at was they were basically, you know, giving tickets to all the kids, but I can't take Zoe to a movie again. The last time we took her to a movie, Josie had to sit in the lobby with her the whole time because she got freaked out, and I'm not about that life. She might have to sit out there by herself during Star Wars, so I'll wait for Josie to come back on that one. And Saxy Prince, man, what's going on? Making beats over here, hanging out, chilling. Playing some music, Saxy Saturdays. What's going on? What you do?
It's been good, man. I have been putting a lot of work in musically. Our listeners will be able to hear some of my work actually later in the show. But yeah, I've just been putting a lot of work as far as my music. You know, can't forget me the Saxy first and foremost before the Prince. So yeah, it's just been really really nice to just get back into, you know, doing full-fledged music, you know, even like really late at night, and just, you know, have something that's just like keeping you up. You got to finish and all that stuff. And it's my philosophy that, you know, while you're sleeping, someone else is working. So that's what I'm trying to do. Just be on my grind.
So Prince, I have a very, very, very important question for you before we hop into all this stuff. Have you recovered from the Case Keenum comp that Miles gave you earlier today when breaking down the game film of you that popped up on Twitter today?
See, it's funny because you know, my wide receiver one had two touchdowns in that game. I'm more than recovered.
It wasn't an insult. That's a good comparison. You're lucky.
That's MVP candidate right there.
That's a future Pro Bowl. That's a future Pro Bowl or future multi-million MVP quarterback.
Not my MVP. Mm-mm.
The league, nope. Sir. The league.
Okay. The MVP is supposed to be someone who's the most valuable. I, right, if well, I take away if I, funny thing is, if I take away Case Keenum for his team, it's the funny thing is the potential that the team might like increase. MVP, if you take him away from the team, they're supposed to go down. Russell Wilson, for instance. Take away from the Seahawks. What are the Seahawks?
This is my fault for triggering Prince. So before we go too far down this rabbit hole of you know, Case Keenum trashing from the Prince, and then you know Prince's mentions being lit on fire for the next couple of days. Let's talk a little bit of football, because you know JR, we know you get in there, you grinding out the tape, and we definitely, before we move on to talking about Cincinnati and some other things, definitely wanted to get your insight on kind of what you saw in the game. What are your takeaways on the Pocket Protector podcast with Eric and Luke? We talked about kind of how, you know, we just had some outstanding Bills from a regression standpoint that were due, and just some things that don't typically happen for Vikings all kind of happened at once, and wasn't a great game, but it doesn't really say that, you know, the rest of the season is over or these things are going to keep happening for us. I guess from your perspective, when you kind of looked at things on film, what were your big takeaways from the game? And I guess, how do you feel about the outlook for the Vikings going forward after you went back and took another couple looks at that?
I thought it was a very weird game. A lot of things that don't normally happen did happen. And I just thought it just wasn't the Vikings' day. We talked about the Panthers playing bully ball and their interior offensive line just bruised and battered the interior Vikings defensive line all game long. And like I said, we talked about them playing bully ball on offense, and that's exactly what they did. Ryan Khalil was back. Trey Turner's a really good player. And Andrew Norwell, who's an up-and-coming player, he's going to be paid this offseason very handsomely. So those three did a fantastic job against Linval Joseph and Tom Johnson all game long. And out of all people, I would have never guessed Jonathan Stewart would have ran for 100 yards on the Vikings defense and 3 touchdowns. And like I said, it was just a weird day on both sides of the ball. The chemistry just wasn't there. Adam Thielen had a couple drops. Diggs had a drop. Keenum was just all over the place with his accuracy. So a lot of things just didn't go the Vikings' way, and that's what we saw throughout that game. And the Panthers are a good team. A lot of people were upset about the loss or thought the Vikings proved to be a pretender during this loss. So I don't really believe that, simply because I think the Panthers are a really good team, and it wouldn't surprise me if they do make a run in the playoffs. But I don't think this loss sets the Vikings back or anything like that. I just think they played a really good team, and it just wasn't their day.
So, I mean, obviously we talked about kind of leading into the game that there was a possibility that, you know, the Panthers might come out and try to bully the Vikings, that, you know, last year especially, you know, the run was kind of our Achilles heel. This year we've been much better against the run, but I think the Vikings defense, most of all, is set up to really shut down a team's passing attack. And so, you know, the Panthers played bully ball. They had some success there. But on the other side of the ball, what was it that you saw that the Panthers did that was able to kind of shut down the Vikings screen game or misdirection or a lot of the things that we've really been eating on all season that have really allowed, you know, the offense to really click? What was it that they were doing that, you know, took a lot of that away, it seemed?
They had a really good game plan. I think their secondary was very aggressive. What I mean by that is the outside corners were really sitting or squatting on anything that they were throwing to the outsides. And they were playing a lot of too high safety looks, meaning they were trying to keep everything in front of them, which allowed the corners to be very aggressive because they had safety help over the top, just in case the Vikings did try to run double moves on the outside, which they did try to do from time to time, but they did have safety help over the top. So they did a really good job of keeping everything in front of them. What really hurt the Vikings was their offensive line injuries. What you saw throughout the game was that, you know, Elfline was down, Easton was in at center, Reef ended up getting hurt, and Rashad Hill was going back and forth from right tackle to left tackle. So the injuries were really starting to pile up. And what their defensive coordinator started to do was he just started to blitz. He got very, very blitz happy, which is expected when you have a lot of backups in. And what happened as a result of that is Case Keenum just got really antsy in the pocket and everything just started to speed up. And it also limited what they could run because, I mean, they were just blitzing so much. So there was only so much that they could do with backups in there.
So looking forward, just based on the game plan that we saw from Carolina, really on both sides of the ball there, what teams that you think we could see down the road have the personnel to really be able to do what Carolina did to us, both on offense and on defense?
None. I don't think any do. I think Carolina has a really good interior offensive line. I don't think any other NFC team has an interior offensive line like they do. Those three really work really well together in Khalil, Norwell, and Trey Turner.
And then defensively, do you think there's any teams that we will face that will be able to, or have the personnel to do what Carolina did? Or are you really just chalking a lot of that up to the fact that, you know, our offensive line was really nicked up in the game?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was attributed to the offensive line being banged up. But if there is one team, well, two teams, actually, I think Seattle, and if their secondary gets healthy, which I don't think they will be in time for the playoffs. I think Earl Thomas is back, but Chancellor and Sherman will be out. The Seahawks have the personnel if their secondary is healthy, and I think the Eagles have the personnel to do it in their front seven. Their secondary isn't very good. They're very weak at the corner spot, but their safeties are pretty good. But the front seven does have the capabilities or the personnel in order to do what the Panthers did against the Vikings.
Awesome. And so, you know, kind of that's a good thing to think about there. And, you know, one of the things, obviously, as Vikings fans, I think, you know, we can feel a little comfortable starting to talk about the playoffs now. I know, you know, people don't like when you talk about like the Super Bowl or anything like that, but I think, you know, 10 wins, you know, a handful of games left in the season here, I think it's all right for us to start talking about the playoffs. And I know, Jerry, you posted, you know, some of the playoff clinching scenarios that are out there. So I guess, you know, can you walk us through a couple of those and kind of help us understand who we're cheering for this weekend if it's not the Vikings?
We're cheering for ourselves. Actually, if we win, we're actually in. So all we have to do is win, and we're in. Trying to pull up the scenarios here. I don't have them in front of me. But as long as the Vikings win, they clinch the NFC North and, of course, the playoff berth as well. So all they have to do is win, and we're in.
Yeah, those are the ones I like right there. And I think the other ones that I think Vikings fans will enjoy here is that, you know, obviously the easy one, you just win or tie, and we're in, actually. But, you know, the next one is if we get a loss or tie from Detroit and a loss plus a loss or tie from Green Bay, we get in. And then a Seattle loss plus an Atlanta loss and a New Orleans loss, we get in. But that's just, you know, when you start to get into, you need like three different teams to do something for you to get in. Ain't nobody got time for all that. Just win. We're in, like JR said, I think, last week. No need for all the scoreboard watching. Let's just, you know, handle business, keep things rolling along, and go into the playoffs hot. So that's really the last topic I think we're going to get to before we get our guest on tonight is, you know, go into the playoffs hot. And that's something that you hear a lot is that, you know, teams that play well in December or the teams that get hot going into the playoffs are the teams that that tend to do well. It's not something I've actually looked up to see, you know, if the stats actually bear this out. But you hear it a lot that, you know, you want to have the momentum going in the playoffs. And so, JR, you said something interesting, but I'm going to start this one with Yinka, and we'll go back through that way there, where you were talking about, you know, maybe not wanting to buy because you want your team to be playing and you have that positive momentum as you kind of move through the playoffs there. So, Prince, I guess, what are your thoughts on that? If you have to choose one way or the other here, and you know, you don't necessarily need to make this like a, you know, an analytic type of thing, but just a feeling for you. Would you rather have your team, you know, have that bye and guaranteed spot in the next round, or your team to kind of come in on a hot streak and just keep that momentum going and play on that opening wild card weekend of the playoffs?
Yeah, I'm actually on the opposite side of this, where I feel like, you know, I would really love for us to have that first round bye. I think we've seen in the last couple of weeks that, you know, is really starting to become a little bit worrisome. The injuries are starting to pile up. I think we had a really nice bye in the middle of the season, get some guys healthy and back, as well as we have that mini bye obviously playing on Thanksgiving. But now, you know, as we move into the playoff season, I really want us to get this bye because, you know, if Riley Reiff has missed extended time, you know, if any other players like Xavier Rhodes, whatever the case is, they might need, you know, a week or two or whatnot to, you know, heal up their bodies and whatnot to be able to play at that high level. I think we've seen Xavier Rhodes when he plays and he's not playing, you know, completely healthy, how he can look. Stephon Diggs is another guy that, you know, you want to come out playing healthy. So my take is, like, I want that first round bye. I want us to be able to really play whoever we're going to play. If it is a Seahawks team, if it is a team that's, you know, maybe going to kind of push us to, you know, perform at that kind of that ceiling that the Vikings, you know, offense and defense can play at. You really want your best players, you know, be able to play out there. So that's just what I'm thinking.
All right. And how about you, Miles? Which side of the coin are you on here? Are you on the, you know, momentum, keep the thing going, stay in your rhythm, keep playing, and all of those type of things? Or are you just are on the side of, hey, you know, we earned this bye, we're playing awesome, we're a better team, and so, you know, we'll play and we'll beat whoever comes in our house after the wild card weekend?
I think I'm definitely on both sides. I would, no matter what, I want the first game to be a home game.
How are you gonna definitely be on both sides?
Where, I mean, you're gonna take what you get. I mean, whatever they end up earning, that's what they're gonna get. But I prefer the bye just because you look at and see how banged up the team is right now, and it's so late in the season. You have so many key pieces that are, you know, limited in practice or missing practice, and some guys end up missing games. So you need that extra week for those guys to get that extra week of recovery. But either way, like I said, though, I want, you know, whether they do get the bye or don't get the bye, I want that first game to be a home game. So, I mean, I know we have a pretty high probability of winning the division, so that would mean we'd get the first game would be at US Bank Stadium, even if they ended up not being a 1 or 2 seed. But I just think for the team itself, and I think getting the 1 or 2 seed and getting that bye is super important to them, just because the way that the season's gone and the way that, you know, some of the, you know, all the people kind of throwing doubt on the team and kind of expecting the implosion and stuff like that, and to work through an 8-game win streak and all that, and to be able to get a 1 or 2 seed and get that first round bye, I think, is really important. And then I know Zim's probably harping on it at this point. Some of these guys are even thinking about it, that, like, you know, being able to play every single game leading up to the Super Bowl at US Bank Stadium, I think, is pretty important to the team, just because you want, you know, want everything to come through US Bank Stadium. So I think getting that first round bye and hopefully the one seed is, like, the, to me, the ultimate goal.
Awesome, man. Oh, sorry.
The ultimate goal before the playoffs, obviously, then, you know what I mean, after that.
Yep. And so, JR, you're kind of on your own here on this one here. So give us your argument. Help bring us back in and understand where you're at here in terms of, you know, wanting to ride the momentum and keep things going playing in that wild card game.
Yeah, I won't necessarily say I don't want, you know, a first round bye. I just want them to – it's kind of hard to explain. So I don't want them limping into the playoffs and then still get a first round bye. So let's say they finish 1 and 2 down this backstretch and they do end up getting the 2 seed. I really don't want a first round bye because it just seems like they might be off at that point and their chemistry just really isn't there at that point. But let's say they finish 2-1 or 3-0 down this backstretch and they do end up getting a 1 or 2 seed, I'll be completely fine with that because, I mean, it's all about being hot and momentum in the playoffs, and we've seen that from time to time again, and I can't wait for you to look up the numbers behind this, Jason, and we get an official answer on this. But I won't necessarily say I don't want them to get a first round bye. I just want them to finish strong this season down the backstretch and get that first round bye, as opposed to limping down this backstretch going 1-2 and getting that first round bye. So I hope they get it. I hope they finish 3-0 down this backstretch.
Yep, and definitely in terms of, you know, them winning out down the backstretch, I think we're all on the same side of that one. But we have a couple minutes here before our guest is supposed to come on, so I'm just going to go back through the line one more time. And, you know, that the term momentum gets kicked around a lot. So I guess as quickly as you can or as simply as you can, JR, from your perspective, when someone says momentum, what are they actually describing?
It's kind of hard to describe. Basically, it's tough. So basically, momentum is confidence. That's all it is. Confidence that you can beat someone throughout a game or throughout a rep or whatever it may be, and carrying it on consecutively over a period of time. That's what momentum is to me. It's very easy to explain in basketball. You see teams go on, you know, 9-0, 10-0, 20-0, whatever runs they do within the game. In football, I think it carries over from game to game. And we saw that New York Giants were a great example, where they were a 6 seed and they played every single week consecutively, and they just rode that hot momentum and that hot streak all the way to the Super Bowl.
Okay, and Miles, I guess, is that kind of similar for you as well, where you just kind of look at momentum as you know, a team's kind of self-belief or confidence in itself, or do you think it's something more than that?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think confidence does play a big role there. I think, you know, let's say the Vikings, you know, go 2-1 down this final three-game stretch. I think it would be important for that last game of the season to be a win, because you want that confidence. You want that, you know, like JR said, so that some of that momentum to be there, so that, you know, heading into the playoffs, whether it's a bye or not, you have that confidence that next week, you know, you're coming off of a positive, and just taking that positive and you know, taking that down a stretch, you know, and then you start a new. You always want to end the season on a streak, on a winning streak. So, you know, you take that last game of the season for any team, like whether you're going to the playoffs or not. To me, take that as you want that winning streak, and then you start a new winning streak into the playoffs. So use that momentum from that winning streak in the regular season and take that momentum into the playoffs. So I definitely agree with what Jared's saying.
Awesome. And Prince, from your perspective, is that just confidence for you? Is basically what you're tracking momentum up to? And I guess, you know, I guess to kind of throw a wrench in there for Prince, what if the other team's just as confident as you are?
Well, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people, when they describe momentum, it's kind of like mythical force that seems to go between, you know, a team's doing really well and a team's doing really poorly. But for me, coming from the psychological standpoint, I think it's more of a, like you guys said, is a confidence thing. But also just like, I think it's that ability to tap into or just use the extra adrenaline that you have in your body and whatnot to continue to believe that, you know, we can do this, we can move forward, we really can win this. Whereas, you know, a player two starts to, you know, diminish that thought process. I guess I'd look at momentum as like one's ability to be completely focused 100% of the time, be completely alert and whatnot, which contributes to, you know, the performance on the field, as well as, you know, I guess enhanced recognition, all that stuff. So a lot of the things that you're seeing when you see like quarterbacks play, or you're seeing the defense really turn it on, you know, momentum, a lot of people tell you it doesn't really actually exist. But I think the fact that we have a term that can clearly affect people's psyche, I think is an important thing. So that's kind of how I look at it.
All right. And perfect timing there, because I was about to hit you with the hook, because our guest is on right on time to come and talk a little bit about the upcoming matchup that we have with the Bengals. We have Joe Goodberry on with us today. Joe, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, thanks for coming on. And as we jump into this thing here, we usually try to start off with a couple easy questions, get you softened up before we really get into the meat of things here. So I guess start things off here. I guess tell us a little bit about yourself and where we can find your work.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I cover the Bengals, mostly NFL draft. But you can find me at Joe Goodberry on Twitter and at the Bengals Wire, a USA Today blog. I'm also doing a project for Bleacher Report right now, watching and grading and scouting AFC wide receivers and tight ends. That won't be out until mid to late January, so we won't see that for a while. But that's what I'm working on right now. And but most of my stuff you can find me on Twitter. It's the best place for me. I'm going to post videos and plays and, you know, talk sports there.
Awesome. And since you said you're grading AFC wide receivers, I want to see if you and Miles become best friends with my next question. So who's the best wide receiver in the AFC right now, based on how they're playing this season?
The two I have graded the highest, and they've got the same grade, as Antonio Brown and DeAndre Hopkins. Even though I think Brown, I'd probably take him as the best receiver in the league, and especially in the AFC. Hopkins has been crazy. And just, you know, his ball skills, his ball control, his body control, making contested grabs with a bad quarterback consistently, you know, once Watson went down. It's amazing what he can do with little help at that position. And they feed him too, and so he's fun to watch. But Brown is still that agility, that speed, that acceleration, run after the catch ability. He can line up anywhere, run any route, even though he's maybe limited at size. He's fantastic. He might be the MVP this year, honestly. Him and Tom Brady, I don't see any reason why they're not 1-2. And it's crazy because a wide receiver has never won it. But I think this would be the best year you can make that case for him.
Yeah, Miles, your man didn't make the cut. We were hoping maybe Keenan Allen might slide into like the top three or the conversation, because that's Miles' dude right there.
Allen is probably number three. I haven't graded him yet, but I just started watching. I've still got a few teams to go through. Grades aren't due until the beginning of January. So I like Allen, and from what I've seen live, you know, obviously he's very good. I think we've got him listed as a slot receiver, though, so they graded on a different scale. So he may not go directly against Brown and Hopkins.
All right. And so, as you know, doing a little bit of research on you before we came here, and your bio says that you're into comics, you know, and all sorts of nerdy conversations. And, you know, that fits in pretty well with I'll say half the members of this podcast here. So okay. Say, who's your favorite comic book character? And then get my follow up for you, just in general, because I need to understand, why was Justice League so bad?
I haven't seen Justice League yet. That's how
well, don't.
Yeah. And that's what I've heard. And that's the thing is, I won't go see I didn't see the last Fantastic Four, as that's kind of, I've been on the conversation today as Disney acquired the rights for them and the X-Men characters. But, you know, if they say it's bad, if it's not worth your time, I've got three kids, I'm not going, because I'm not paying all that money to bring the whole family to go see a bad movie. But my favorite character is Spider-Man. Probably because growing up in the 90s, the animated series was great. I mean, same with the X-Men and Batman animated series around that time. But, yeah, Spider-Man's always been my favorite character. And, you know, while the movies have been maybe up and down for the most part, especially the second set of movies under Sony. But, you know, he's still my favorite character. And the comics are really the high point for him.
Yinka, is this acceptable?
I'm sorry.
I mean, I don't know. I'm a guy who has to see every Marvel movie, every DC movie. I got to give it my critique and make sure every character is done. Oh, okay. Yeah, then we good then. We good then. I mean, yeah. I would agree. I haven't actually seen the Fantastic Four or like rendition with Michael B. Jordan and all that stuff. Yeah. I haven't seen that yet, but
it's nothing special. I think it's better than the.
No, I know it is.
It's better than the ones with like Chris Evans in them, but
I really like Chris Evans as Human Torch, though. I think he was like the bright spot in that movie.
I didn't like those their movies themselves, though. I don't think
those movies they're just really cool. Moments, though. I mean, like, yeah. Super Surfer was really cool in those movies.
I thought it was a really good idea, yeah. But I just think that it just wasn't. I don't know. There are certain aspects that they didn't capitalize on. I mean, you had such a good character like Silver Surfer, but.
Right, and then Galactus they completely botched. So
yeah, the Galactus movie. was a mess. But anyways, and
I love these moments right now where we have Joe who does great draft work, and JR is right now just kind of staring off into oblivion, wondering what is happening, because comic book movies are just not his thing. And we do this to him on a semi-regular basis where we just take it off on a nerd tangent, and JR is just like, "What is happening on this football podcast?"
I'm not a cop.
Those are close, though, right? I mean, if you're a nerd about football, you can end up nerding about a lot of things, and it can be comics or it can be, you know, your car, whatever the case may be. I mean, if you have that nerd gene in you, it ends up branching off into a lot of other things.
See, I've never been a comic or a movie guy for some reason. Just never got into it.
JR, you've been grinding tape since you were five. We know what it is.
But I see that's the thing with me. It's like I didn't actually grow up on like reading comics. I grew up on the TV shows, all the little stuff. So I was watching those shows all the time. So I got a lot of the background. And then that's when I went back and kind of read some of like the major like Infinity Wars, and then Planet Hulk and some of those other like really major comics. So I kind of grew up on like.
Yeah, I was gonna
TV
say
shows.
If you can see behind me, I end up got a bunch of comics on the wall in here and stuff. Yeah. So
wow.
I got a lot of sports stuff, you know, on the other half and in the office area. But then my playroom up here it ends up comic all over the place.
That's awesome. Well, I guess we did bring you on to talk about the Bengals a little bit. Yeah, so I guess we should do that at least a little bit while we got you here. So like, what's the current mood around Cincinnati, the team, the fan base, like? Yeah, how are things around the team? Because, you know, the Bengals, Bungles, whatever, they used to be really, really bad, and then you were good, and now not so much. Like, how are people taking that right now?
I think people are done. They're frustrated. You've forgotten about the 90s at this point because they were so bad. Marvin came, and Marvin Lewis really changed the culture and the franchise. He's been a good coach. It's just he's been their Tony Dungy for the Bucks, and the Bengals never moved on to get John Gruden. You know, they never got that guy that could push them over the edge. They stuck with Marvin. They gave him a long leash, longer than probably any franchise would have given him. And because of it, I think their play has definitely suffered. Now, after 15 years, you're really doing the same thing you've always done there. You're saying the same lines. You've got the same philosophies on offense and defense. It's really caught up to them. And now they've missed a couple draft classes, a couple picks, some free agencies, losses. The team isn't as good as they used to be. The roster isn't as good. So now two back-to-back years of losing seasons. I think everyone's ready to move on and start something fresh, even if that means a step back in year one. Even if that means you may end up with a worse coach, because that's how it works sometimes. You may go through a couple years where you're still searching for that guy. People are ready to take that gamble and see what else is out there.
So, like, is this the year that Marvin actually gets replaced? Because kind of the rumors or what you hear a lot about, you know, Mike Brown is that he's just kind of cheap and doesn't like to spend kind of top dollar on really anything, it seems. He will take risks on players that others seem to never want to take risks on. And he doesn't seem to be that guy who's going to go out and make that really splashy kind of expensive hire. So I guess, like, what are the names that maybe are floating around that are realistic names for the Bengals, just given how Brown tends to be when it comes to these things?
Yeah, you're right. And that's why I think there is always that small chance he could be back, even if it was a 1 or 2 year deal, just because, you know, I think they feel like the team can win and is close enough to get back into the playoffs that they wouldn't want to blow it up completely with a new coach from the outside that maybe ends up being the wrong hire. I think if it would be someone that they know. I think if Hugh Jackson, even though the Browns recently said he's going to be the guy in 2018, I think they would love if he got let go. They'd probably be the first guy they'd hire, because 2 years ago when Hugh left and Marvin needed a contract extension, it was right after 2015. They gave a plan to Mike Brown and said, listen, Marvin's going to coach another year, maybe two. We want you to pay Hugh as if he's going to be like the assistant coach. And when Marvin moves on, here's the plan. He will step into that spot and you can keep most of the roster and the coaching staff intact. Mike Brown turned it down for whatever reason. And it's probably because of money, but he did turn it down and let Hugh walk. But I think if that opportunity came up, he would do it. And they like their defensive coordinator too, Paul Gunther. They've kind of groomed him. He was always just an assistant to the coaches when he started. He ended up being an assistant to the defensive backs, then linebacker coach, and then under Mike Zimmer as his assistant, and then he replaced Zimmer, and he's done an okay job. I don't know if he's the guy or not, but he's been homegrown, and I think they like him within the organization. Other than that, I don't know if they're going to dip their toe in anywhere else. It's probably going to be under the recommendation of guys they know, whether that's Mike Zimmer, and he's got maybe a Pat Shurmur as the offensive coordinator. If he's, you know, he might end up being a too hot of a name and go to a bigger team that has more money, or it can end up being maybe an assistant from the Vikings or in Denver. They've had Vance Joseph before under their staff. So I think it probably to lean on someone that they know and someone that probably isn't too high priced.
Hey Joe, quick question. Well, a couple questions for you regarding kind of I know Jason likes to cover me as the guy that likes to talk wide receivers, because I do. It's what I played. It's what I enjoy to watch. It's my favorite part of football, probably. But obviously, you guys have a phenomenal talent in A.J. Green. How do you see that matchup going this week against Xavier Rhodes? And how do you fare? Like, I'm a big A.J. Green guy, so I'm always worried about him no matter who he's lined up against, because it doesn't matter how elite they are, because he's – you know, he can make anybody look bad.
Excuse me. Got a little bit of a cold. I'm with you. I think Green, I think he could be in conversation with the number one receivers, the top receivers in the NFL. And the only thing that really holds him back is this offensive design and a lot of times Andy Dalton. And I think it started to affect Green a little bit this year. He's been more frustrated than ever. I mean, he chokeslammed Jalen Ramsey. He spoke out against the coaches. He's some balls have skipped to his feet and he's just tossed them to the side. Things you've never seen out of him. He's always been, Larry Fitzgerald, Andre Johnson type, just doesn't say anything, goes about his business. But for me, Green, a lot of people maybe from the outside watch the highlights, think of him as a jump ball guy, guy that makes crazy catches. I think his best attribute is his route running. For a guy that's 6'4", that lanky, he really gets down in and out of his breaks. His body control, his speed control really helps him. He stays vertical throughout his stem. And, a guy like that to be able to move the way he does is rare. It's not normal. And I think that's the hardest part about covering him. And I honestly feel like he can beat any of the top corners. I think the top 10 receivers can beat the top 10 corners any day in the NFL, just the way the rules are and the way the game's played now. Having said that, the Bengals offense takes him out of the game way too much. And a lot of it is because they are predicated on the pre-snap read. And if the defense shows, a cover two, they say, okay, we're not throwing to the boundary. If the safety is shaded towards Green, they're going to say, okay, pre-snap look, Green's not going to be the guy. He's doubled here. We're going to go to the other guy. And defenses know this at this point. And they'll show one look and they'll switch to another right after the snap and really try and take Green out of the game. Because as the Bengals offense goes, it's reluctant on Green's performance. If he has a big game, their offense moves the ball and they have success. If you can take him out, or if you can get him frustrated, or if you can confuse Andy Dalton, the offense comes to a stall. And it's frustrating to watch as a Bengals fan because you know how good he is. And I feel like his numbers could be even better. I don't think we've seen peak AJ Green for a complete 16 games because there's too many ways to take him out. I've said of the elite receivers, he's probably the easiest guy to cover because too often right now, there's no one else to help him since Marvin Jones is gone. Mohamed Sanu, Tyler Eifert's been out. You can keep the safety over the top. They'll run a linebacker underneath for the short stuff, and that corner will sit on the comeback and out routes and really get physical with him. And that's what Rhodes does. Rhodes is a physical long corner, so I think it's a tough matchup for him. And especially if the Vikings really focus their entire defense on stopping Green, which they should, which every defense should. So it's a tough matchup for him. But we're past the point where we're still evaluating Green. We know who he is. We know how good he is. It just sucks that, I feel like outside of Cincinnati, people don't understand really, and maybe you do, but they don't understand how good of a receiver he really can be.
Yeah, and I think to actually segue into, another topic about AJ Green and kind of the wide receivers for the Cincinnati Bengals altogether, you touched on it. You basically said, you shut down AJ Green, you're basically shutting down the offense. And I think over the last couple of seasons, we've seen the Bengals try to invest in that number two wide receiver to help take away that from AJ Green and help open things up for him. There's Tyler Boyd. I'm Brandon LaFell's there, but I mean, he is what he is. And then, John Ross. So you have guys like that. You invest pretty high, high picks on, Boyd in the second, John Ross, a top 10 pick who's now in IR. What are kind of your thoughts on some of those guys and what you think, they might need to do in the future to kind of get this figured out, because it obviously hasn't worked the last couple of seasons.
Right. It can't continue the way it is. And they figured, losing Marvin Jones and losing Mohamed Sanu, which I don't think they're ever interested in signing Sanu, because what's the value of a slot guy, even if he has, the versatility to do some different things that Sanu can do. But again, a guy who doesn't separate well, but has really good hands and just a good teammate. I think you kept the value on those guys. And if you're going to choose between Jones and Sanu, you're going to pick Jones, I believe. And I think they wanted to. They thought they could retain Jones, but Jones knew his production was limited with the Bengals being behind. Green is getting 150 targets, and then at the time, Eifert was coming off his best year, so he probably figured he's behind Eifert for the future. And he made his decision probably based on that. But I don't think the Bengals offered him as much as, especially not guaranteed, as what the Lions got. So, to replace those guys, they signed Brandon LaFell in the offseason that year. And they really wanted either Will Fuller or Josh Doctson in the first round. And everyone knew that. And everyone knew they wanted a receiver. So what happened? Teams start jockeying to get in front of them, as they always do, because the Bengals are very transparent. And three receivers go right in front of the Bengals. And it was Doctson, Fuller, and Treadwell. They weren't interested in Treadwell, but the Vikings jumped on that. So they had to go in the second round. They lose out on Sterling Shepard. They lose out on Michael Thomas. Those guys go right before them. And I think they kind of panicked and went with the guy that they felt comfortable with, or at least the most comfortable with, in Tyler Boyd. They know he's a slot guy. They thought he could do a little bit after the catch and get creative with. being a below average athlete, he really, you know, hasn't translated as a guy who can do anything more or much after the catch. The second rookie year was okay. You know, he did his thing. Second year, he's had issues off the field too. I think they figured out Brandon LaFell is a better slot guy than boundary guy. So they started working him in there, chewing into Boyd's snaps a little bit more. And right now LaFell is better than Boyd. So Boyd takes the back seat to LaFell at this point. And they figured we'll draft two speed outside guys. And the first one was John Ross, number 9 overall. They completely botched it from an injury standpoint and from a, you know, really knowing what he is and what he isn't. There was a little bit of a disconnect, it seems like, from the front office to the coaching staff. Seemed like the front office really liked him, knew what he was, knew what he could do, knew what he could offer for this offense. Meanwhile, the coaching staff, Marvin's very old school. He tries to bring rookies through it the hard way, make them earn their reps, make them earn their snaps. It didn't really mix well with Ross and how Ross was trying to come back from injury while, you know, get mixed in a little bit, maybe get a chunk of the playbook. Marvin's got the kind of guys, if you don't know every single play, he's not going to put you out there. And there was even talk, I guess, before he went on IR that they may have to play him at corner because they had so many injuries. And, you know, apparently he said, hey, I got a shoulder thing, and they gave him an MRI. So now he's out for the year because he's going to have surgery. The other guy they drafted was Josh Malone out of Tennessee. Young guy, 20 years old when they drafted him, ran the second fastest 40, only really been playing receiver for 2.5 years. So he's raw and he's tall and he's fast. But really right now you can tell as that other guy in the three wide receiver sets playing the outside spot, he's a ghost out there for most of the game. They don't know how to use him. They don't know how to get him the ball. I don't think he's completely ready, but they're giving him the reps, letting him grow through it on the field. So their offense is limited. It's A.J. Green or nothing because Tyler Croft's okay at tight end replacing Eifert, but he's not a game breaker. LaFell is what he is. He's a solid possession guy. He's a big body. He'll fight for the ball, but he's not stretching defenses. He's not getting open versus man. You know, and so the receiving options really are not helping Green at all. And you'll see so many times the defense will shade towards Green, maybe have three guys with attention on Green, and they could be laughing at the other guys, and they're not expecting them to get open at all.
Hey, Joe, I just had a quick question. So I made no secret that, like, Joe Mixon before the draft, he was kind of like my top running back. You know, just watching the Bengals, it just kind of seems like they're maybe underutilizing him, maybe not using some maybe not playing more towards his strengths a lot. I guess what are you seeing as far as you know, how he's being used with the Bengals, and you foresee him being a huge impact on the game on Sunday?
They definitely are misusing him. And that's another disconnect too with the, you know, drafting him and then implementing it on the field. If you watch Mixon last year at Oklahoma, he's running out of the shotgun. They're running inside zone stuff out of a spread offense. And, you know, it worked for him. And that's exactly what he did. He didn't run under center while the quarterback was under center one time last year. The Bengals pretty much looked at him like, hey, he's a Jeremy Hill replacement. He's a 6'1", 230-pound guy. We're going to run him from under center. We're going to put a fullback in front of him and run some power stuff. And their offensive line their offensive line is poor. It's a bottom five unit in the league, especially run blocking. They may be the worst. It was not a good mix. You got a guy who didn't do this a lot, so he's learning on the fly. He's not getting a lot of reps. He's not getting a lot of consistent reps because they still tried getting Jeremy Hill the ball. They still tried getting Giovanni Bernard the ball. They didn't have a good enough plan. It took them 10 to 12 weeks to really figure out what Joe Mixon was. And when they figured it out, they realized, and it's something we said all offseason as Bengals fans and analysts, we said, you don't have to run different offenses the way you had to with Gio and Hill. You know, those guys were two different guys. With Mixon and Gio, you can run a lot of the same stuff. You can stay in shotgun much more. Keep the fullback on the sideline. You can run a lot of that inside zone stuff. You can split them out. You can run routes with these guys. They haven't split Mixon out and run a route with them yet, and that's a lot of his biggest plays at Oklahoma were exactly that. So they still haven't completely embraced what he is and what he can do. I think that's one of the reasons a lot of fans are ready for a new coach to get in here with new ideas, because it seems like far too often they try to fit these talented guys to their scheme rather than fitting the scheme to them. So I still have a lot of faith in Mixon. I think his numbers aren't indicative of his quality of play this year. He's getting hit at the line or behind the line way too much. There was a play there was a series of plays against the Browns where he lost 28 yards on 3 carries. And each time he's getting hit in the backfield as soon as he gets the ball. and then he can, the next three plays, he can rip off 12, 8, and 10. And his average is 2.5 yards per carry because he didn't gain anything basically out of that six carries. So the numbers aren't there, but on tape, I think he's looked pretty good. I think he still has a future as a top running back. And he's a rare talent. That size, that speed, that receiving ability, that patience and vision behind the line. A lot of people compare him to Le'Veon Bell, and I think that's what he looks like.
Joe, JR here. Thanks for joining us again, buddy. I know you guys are coming off a tough loss to the Bears at home. Clearly a team that the Bengals have superior talent to, but I mean, it just looked like the Bengals mailed it in from start to finish, and there's no reason they should be losing 33-7 at home, especially to the Chicago Bears. And, you know, the Vikings are coming off a tough loss against Carolina, a very hard-fought game, two potential playoff teams. So with Cincinnati walking into Minnesota this week, what do you think the keys are to victory for them if they are going to win this game?
It's tough because, like you said, they look like they mailed it in. I think once you realize change is happening and the season's likely over, especially for playoff hopes, that happens a lot around the league. You start to mail it in unless you got young guys fighting for positions, fighting for playing time, and fighting for the future. that's not the case in Cincinnati a lot of times. So they're giving their reps to the veterans. And now it seems like they're out of it. They're just now starting to consider playing some of the young guys, putting some of these hurt veterans on IR, you know, things you probably should have done 2 weeks ago. But, you know, in terms of matching up with the Vikings, it's on offense, it's tough for the Bengals. That offensive line versus the Vikings defense, I think, is probably the biggest mismatch going into this game. I think the athleticism linebackers for the linebackers from Minnesota is another mismatch. It's going to be very tough for the Bengals to run the ball and try and get these guys, these blockers, to the second level and get a hand on these linebackers. It's going to be, you know, as I said, the offense flows through Green. So if Green can have a game where he busts one out, one long one, or gets on top of the defense a couple times, it opens it up for the other guys. And you start to get easier coverage. And that's when a LaFell can beat a safety over the middle. And that's when, Tyler Croft can beat a linebacker up the seam and end up making a big play. And then maybe if Mixon plays, he was cleared for concussion protocol, so I think he will. Him and Gio can still affect the game, in different ways. So they have opportunities. I really think the Vikings have the advantage on defense versus Bengals offense. But on the Bengals defense, I think the Vikings, again, Diggs and Thielen have been moving in the slot, both of them. And I think that's where you beat the Bengals. Last week, Kendall Wright had 10 catches over 100 yards. And it's not beating anyone. Darquez Dennard is the Bengals' nickel corner. But they play so much zone, especially inside, that there's open areas. There's gaps. And the Bengals love to show the two linebackers in the A-gap before the snap. Creates a little bit of a void between the linebackers and safeties. It invites that over the middle throw to tight ends, to the slot receiver. And the Bengals have unathletic linebackers for the most part. So they really can't close that gap as fast. So, you know, I like Rudolph in this game going over the middle. I like the slot receiver to chew him up a little bit, whoever that may be. And I like if you can get Stephon Diggs, maybe going deep against Drake Kirkpatrick on the boundary. I think that's an advantage again. I think a lot of teams are just attacking Kirkpatrick. William Jackson's played out of his mind on the other side. Teams are really not even going against him. They don't want to even risk it anymore. Denard's been solid in the slot, but again, they play a lot of zone inside. If you're going to take a shot, it's at Kirkpatrick's side. And with his lack of ball skills, which I think is the biggest, you know, attribute I look for in a corner, is can he make a play on the ball? Is he going to panic when the ball's in the air, when his back's to the ball? That's Kirkpatrick. He's the guy who's panicking and the ball lands right next to him and he doesn't make a play on it or doesn't get his hand on it, and the receiver does. While William Jackson on the other side is complete opposite. He'll be beat early in the route, but he doesn't care because he knows he can get to that ball before the receiver does. He can track it. He can locate it. He can get his hand between your hands and make a play. And, it's a stark difference between the two of them. So if you're going to take your shots, it's on Kirkpatrick's side.
Awesome. I think the last Bengals football related question, because we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, Marvin, is he gone? Is he not? But the thing that surprisingly we haven't really got into is, Andy Dalton. Like, what are the thoughts on Andy Dalton amongst the fan base? Like, he's kind of, you know, I've seen many people kind of refer to him as quarterback purgatory, or he's like the face of that when people talk about it. What are the long-term plans for him? Is he safe, or what's going on there?
They're on the hook for only $2.4 million if they decide to move on from him this offseason. I think that's important because you're picking top 10 2 years in a row for this team, and especially since Dalton's been there 2011. It's, you know, they were in the playoffs the first 5 years. They were picking in the 20s. You never really had the opportunity to upgrade at quarterback. Now 2 years in a row, you're picking top 10. That usually the teams that pick top 10 and do consistently have an issue at quarterback. And this year, Dalton's numbers are okay. They're right around his career average. But watching it, it's not the same for whatever reason. And they have lost talent on the offensive line. They've had issues at running back and we're trying to figure out how to get the running game going. Losing all the guys we've talked about at weapon, you know, at wide receiver and tight end. it's all affected him. And I think the offensive line has really affected him the most because he doesn't do well with pressure, and he doesn't do well when he has to get off his mark and make a throw from a different platform. And so you'll see a lot of that probably on Sunday. I think Zimmer knows it. I think a lot of defensive coordinators know it. So they try to move him around a little bit, try and get Dalton to move off that, you know, comfortable spot in the pocket and make him a little more uncomfortable. I think Bengals fans are ready to see if there's an opportunity to upgrade. Like you said, quarterback purgatory, it's real. And when you pick between 14 and 24 every year, you're good enough to get into the playoffs, but bad enough to never, you know, really consider getting a quarterback because you're not bad enough to pick top 10. You're not bad enough to pick top 5. So you miss out on those elite quarterback prospects. So the guy you have is probably better than the quarterback you may be able to get at 16, 17, 18. So you end up sticking with your guy. You end up extending him. And I think Bengals fans are finally getting to the point where they look back and they say 2015, now his best year really was elite production wise. They look back and they say, you know, maybe that was just an outlier. Maybe that was a product of having a really good coordinator in Hugh Jackson, of top 5 offensive line. And really the weapons were as good as anybody, if not the best in the league at that time. Is it easier? And you guys are probably going to be faced with this with Case Keenum having the year he's having, and he's probably very similar to Dalton, to be honest. You know, you're going to be faced with it of saying, is it easier to find an upgrade at quarterback, which is hard, or is it easier to build an elite team around a good enough quarterback? And that's what probably Keenum and Dalton are. And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if it is, you know, if you hit on wide receivers, if you hit on the offensive linemen and turn around your offensive line in 1 year the way the Vikings did, you can get this team back into the playoffs. I just think that window is probably sustainable for maybe 1 or 2 years. The Bengals really probably only had a chance to win it in 2014 and 15, and they couldn't do it. And once that happens, you lose free agents. You don't hit maybe on a draft class, and next thing you know, you're picking top 10 because that's how the league is. I think it's very hard. You're in that situation where you don't know which is the easier path, but I think now Bengals fans are getting to the point where they're looking at it and saying, it may be best to see if, you know, if there's a franchise quarterback there at number 9, you might have to pull the trigger because it might be worth the upside and it might be the only way to really get this team over the hump.
Well, all right. We've racked your brain with quite a few questions here, and you've come through with the goods for us. So thank you again for joining us and playing injured, fighting through the illness to come on and record with us tonight. But before we get you out of here, just a couple of things. I guess, what upcoming projects do you have that we should be on the lookout for?
The Bleacher Report, the AFC wide receivers and tight ends. We won't see that until mid to late January. So in the meantime, just stick with me on Twitter. I like to post things on there, whether that's quick videos or pictures or scouting reports, whatever we're looking at. And I'm getting into draft season. The team's out of it. Draft season's starting a little bit early for me this year. So I can't wait to dive in and start looking at those guys.
Awesome. And then the last thing is we need a bold prediction for you for the game that's coming up this weekend, and then a score prediction.
All right, I'll start with the score first. It's the one I've given a few times now. I'm going to say 27-13 in favor of the Vikings. So that would allow them to cover the 10-point spread. I just don't think the Bengals offense is good enough. They may score 2 out of their first 3 drives to start the game. They've had a really good script going into almost every single game this year. Their second half offense has been non-existent. Whatever they have pretty much at halftime, you can pretty much cap them at that on offense. So if the Vikings are winning or within a score at that point, you should feel pretty comfortable. For a bold prediction, I'll say the bold prediction is Vontaze Burfict will not injure a Viking this week.
I like it. Well, Joe, thanks again for coming on. It was an awesome interview, and yeah, we'll be looking forward to digging into all your content as draft season gets going for everybody else.
Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime you need me, I'm here.
Awesome.
Thanks, Joe.
All right. Well, that was fun. Joe fighting through the illness to bring us all those wonderful Bengals takes. But before we get up out of here, you know, I need all y'all's bold prediction, score prediction. So, JR, starting with you, man. What's your bold prediction? What's your score prediction?
I'm going to go Vikings 24, Bengals 10. I just think it's no excuses for the Vikings this week. Got to take care of business. I mean, get an AFC opponent. Bruised and battered last week against the Chicago Bears. And I just think they need to impose their will on this team. You're back at home. First home game in 28 days. There's no excuses to lay an egg this game. Win and you're in the playoffs. Bold prediction. I think the Mike Zimmer, Marvin Lewis relationship will be mentioned more than 8 times throughout the game.
Hey, that's a good one. I liked it. Miles, how about you, man? What you got? Bold prediction, score prediction.
Score prediction, I think Vikings win 30-16. And bold prediction, David Morgan has 2 touchdowns.
Boy, like it.
As long as he plays, I say.
Oh, yeah, I mean, obviously, we'll let you off the hook if he doesn't run. But, right. You know, the spark god coming out there doing the thing. Saxy Prince, what you got, man? Spark god.
I think it's going to be a huge Harrison Smith game. I think he actually has 2 interceptions. One is going to be a pick six. So he's kind of going to be a nightmare for Andy Dalton. And I think my score prediction is 27-10.
Okay. All right. I mean, my score prediction, I'll get that out of the way. It's going to be, I'm just going to go with Prince and Joe's 27-10 there. And my bold prediction is that Andy Dalton gets Trey Waynes into the Pro Bowl in this game. Trey Waynes going to have 3 interceptions and 1 pick six. Well, there it is. That's it.
I don't have a comment for that. Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
There we go.
I like it, Jason.
It's like Jay Cutler used to do back in the day. He'd have that one game of the season where you get like D'Angelo Hall into the Pro Bowl. Just throw him like 4 picks in one game. Get him in. That's going to be Trey Waynes this year. Well, all right. I think we covered everything we wanted to there. So before we completely shut this thing down, I guess, JR, what are you working on? What should we be on the lookout for? Where are you going to be popping up on podcasts? What's going on with you, man?
I don't have any other podcast scheduled to date right now, but I'm working on another Reading Between the Lines scout notebook for next Friday. Talking about wide receiver 1, Calvin Ridley. So I'm sure Miles will definitely read that one.
Yes, sir.
I will.
Miles, what's in your future other than putting ointment in your dog's ear?
There is no future right now. I am preparing for the holidays because I'm exhausted, Jason. And I'm probably preaching to the choir. So
I feel you, man. I feel you. No, I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling good. You know, we're doing all right. But, you know, again, we'll check in come, you know, Sunday morning might be something different. But, you know, it's funny because my mother-in-law is very, very, very old school, like super old school. And so just the idea of me being here with the kids without, like, my wife in the house, like, has her terrified. So she calls and checks in on me probably 3-4 times a day. Just to, how are things going? Were you able to get them to sleep? Were they okay? I'm like, yes, mom. Like, we're good. What did they eat? Like, we had food. I warmed it up. You know.
He said I warmed it up.
Yeah. Well, you know she's not leaving here without, you know, leaving some plates in the fridge. Because my mother-in-law also, I think, sometimes thinks that, like, I don't know how to work the stove. So, you know, she, you know.
The stove. You say that last. Yeah, you don't know how to work like the actual kitchen itself. Like,
yeah, she's like worried that I'm not gonna be able to like find where the food is that I brought back from the grocery store. It's very strange. But yeah, I'll be good. Prince, how about you, man? What you got on deck for us? What you working on?
Case
No articles. No, actually. Well, that's more of a long term thing, but yeah, just like I said in the beginning of the show.
Oh, wow. Nope. Hello. Uh-oh. Hello. Hold on. Pause. You went full Gorm on that last one there. We couldn't hear anything that you said.
Okay. So
run it back.
I've got zero problems. let's go back to this is the usual Yinka problem.
Yeah, this is true. You've been strong with your internet this week.
Strong.
Weekend,
so.
Been strong.
I'm not working on really any small projects right now. More of a big project, you know, Case Keenum thing. But just like I said, I've been doing a lot of music. So if anybody needs music for their podcasts, just hit me up. I can throw some fire at you.
How much are you charging?
I'm gonna say that out loud. So
hey, that means it's a lot of money, folks. That means it's a lot more than you want to pay.
If you gotta ask the price, you can't afford it, yo.
Yep. Hey, man, I got a degree in music, so I gotta make money somehow.
Well, all right. Well, and you know, Saxy Saturday's coming though, right?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Any hip hop suggestions? I think I'm gonna go with hip hop thing this week. So, any songs that y'all are listening to right now that are just like, man, I would love to hear a sax version of that. You can hit me up.
Okay. Well, all right then.
Hold on, real quick. Oh, no. I don't know if I've ever thought of that in my life before. So thank you for putting that out there, Jason.
What?
I've never thought of or Yinka too. I've never thought of what I think this song would sound like played in a saxophone.
I know a lot of people don't. I won a lot of talent shows because, I'm telling you, in college, one talent show I won one time was like, you know, the intro to Frozen or whatever, people heard it and they're like, and I was like, is he going to do what I think he's going to do? And I killed it. And I actually almost won that talent show that year. Only came the second to.
Is he telling about almost talent show wins right now? Is that what's happening?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've won other ones.
But he started the conversation with, I've won a many talent shows, but then he told us about the one that he didn't win.
Okay.
Yeah, humility, you guys. I come humble.
Right.
Yes, the Saxy Prince is known for his humility. That's what I see in your mentions most frequently, is people complimenting you on your humility.
Hey, man, I'm the most humble person I know, so.
It's true. You are the most humble person you know. Well, all right, y'all. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. I'm here once again with the full crew, JR, Miles, and Yinka. Y'all have a good night.